Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Hello. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Scan Radio Show number 2375, presented by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, NASCA. My name is Jo Kalk, calling in from the beautiful Oregon coast. I am an adult survivor of child abuse, and I will be your host this evening. We have a special guest tonight, but first I want to tell a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization which is self-supporting through our own contributions. Our focus is on child abuse trauma, prevention, intervention, and recovery. Tax-deductible donations are gladly received. We have a single purpose at NASCA, to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And as I mentioned, we have a special guest tonight. Her name is Shirley J. Davis. She's a returning guest. She's from Mattoon, Illinois. She's a survivor of child abuse and a writer for blogs, magazines, and websites. And I would like to go ahead and welcome Shirley to the show. Hi, Shirley. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
Good. I'm not sure if you remember from the last time you were on, but generally we have about 15, 20 minutes where you just talk about your earliest experiences, and then we go through the panel. We have several people called in, and then they ask questions or give feedback, and then you move on to the next part. We have 90 minutes, so we have time for about three major rounds like that. So if you can you want to pace yourself as you go through. And I just wanted to say that all of my parts are really looking forward to hearing from you. So thank you. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Hi, I'm Shirley Davis. I'm kind of new at this. Explain that to me again. I'm sorry, I've lost exactly what you were asking me to do.
Okay, why don't you just talk about you had some severe abuse, childhood trauma, physical, emotional, and sexual abuse, and any part of that that you wish to share to give people a concept of what you have survived, be fine. And then I know that you've written a lot about dissociative identity disorder, and I'm hoping that you would be able to talk most of the hour and a half on that, if that's okay with you. All right?
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Okay, thank you. I'm getting a little off there. My name is Shirley.
No,
Davis,
it's okay.
Like you said.
I'm
a survivor of severe and repetitive sexual and otherwise abuse when I was a child. Growing up, I went through some torture and things that are just nasty. And it had an impact on my brain. My developing brain was not able to coalesce into one personality about the age of 5 to 7 when that normally happens. And because of that, I have grown up with dissociative identity disorder, which means I have alternate parts of myself. They are me, but they're alternate parts of myself stuck in trauma time, stuck in the time when they were formed during the trauma.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that that was something that later you had to work through to get them together. But initially, it sounded like the abuse lasted a long time until you were 15 or so. That's
yes,
a long time to have to.
Yeah, I was 15 when it ended, and the abuse ended at 15, but the trauma continued because I really didn't understand that I was living in trauma. I didn't understand at all that it wasn't normal to have alters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just thought it was something everybody else did too.
Mm-hmm.
And
I started
seeing a therapist in 1990. I actually began to have memories flooding back to me before I ever saw her. I thought I was just going crazy. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine what these flashbacks were about. I mean, I knew what I was seeing, the rape scenes and things like that, but I didn't believe it. And then when I started seeing my first therapist, she took about 4 months listening to me and talking to me before she laid on me the diagnoses of what was called then multiple personality disorder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so some of your alters came out during your sessions with her then, it sounds like. And so she was able to identify.
Well, it took 2 years for me to be able to even cry in front of her, let alone allow her to see an alter. She was going by the other symptoms. So I would space out in her office and just leave the room mentally. And the flashbacks, like I was going in there and talking about it like it was yesterday's news, like it was just something that happened in the news. It wasn't anything important. And there were other symptoms and signs that she watched for and saw. And when I started telling her about hearing the alters, at first she was a little dubious, but then she's like, wait a minute. There's something going on here besides what, more than what she, you know, more than what, than like schizophrenia or anything like that. And it really was brave of her to diagnose me when she did, because the idea had fallen out of favor. Dissociative identity disorder had fallen out of favor.
Mm. As if you just turn off a switch, right? And suddenly nobody has it anymore. Right. Wow. Okay. I thank you for coming here tonight, and I just wanted to say that I too had a similar thing, and that I'm pretty much together right now, but I still have parts that come out sometime, and it's kind of interesting. We can have a nice campfire talk with ourselves. So,
yes,
just letting you know.
Yeah.
Just so we keep everybody, give everybody time to talk, because otherwise there's going to be that one that says, you never listen to me anyway. So, okay. how about we have our panel introduce themselves to you, and then they can ask some questions, and then we'll go a little deeper into what your life was a bit about. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you. We first are going to go to our president and founder, Bill, who's currently in Florida. He has also a place in California, but he's currently in Florida. Hi, Bill. Welcome. And you are on with Shirley.
Well, thank you, Joe. Shirley, thank you very much for being here tonight. I know you've been on the show before, and we actually selected you as somebody who we wanted to hear from again. It's been a little while, of course. And this is what we like to do. We like to have people come back and, you know, eventually in the course of the 90 minutes, I'm sure you're going to relate to us how your life has changed, you know, in the last little while. Because we want the newcomer out there to know that you can make progress. You don't fix everything all at once. But that progress is, you know, a few steps forward and a couple steps back sometimes, but it's generally forward. And the whole idea is to get more and more comfortable inside ourselves. That's the, you know, a very generic description of successful recovery, more and more comfortable inside myself. And I think that's what you're talking about. I have to be honest, I don't have any DID. Of course, I've heard a lot of stories of people who do over the years. So I have a, I have an explained, you know, knowledge of it, but I don't have an experiential one. It didn't happen to me. Although I do know that I, there were times when I was being molested, for example, when I would be in different parts of the room, I'd be up kind of looking down, and I'd be in between, I'd be outside in the, you know, in, I don't know, sort of daydreaming outside. I wouldn't be present. But that's not really DID. That's just, that is disassociating, but it's not having what you have. And I, you know, I'm kind of interested in hearing you explain from your perspective what it felt like, and how it manifested. And then ultimately, of course, later in the show, you know, how you integrated them and how you're, you know, still working on that and so forth. But thank you so much, Shirley, for being here. I'm, I know there's a lot of NASCA members who have had or do have, I guess, DID, and many others like myself who are very interested in hearing what it is you have to say.
Well, my all, thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me. The alters began manifesting from early childhood. I, of course, didn't realize, understand there was anything different about me. I just assumed that everybody had these others that they talked to and that they played with and that they had communication with. And as I grew, I began to move away from, you know, I tried to coalesce into one personality, and I tried to move away from having pretend friends and things like that. But things kept happening that I couldn't explain. Like the little girl down the street where I lived in Mattoon when I was very young, stating that I had said something to her, something very mean, and I did not remember saying it. And she was adamant that I had, it was me that had said it, and, you know, and I just couldn't understand what was going on. I remember sitting in my room afterwards, after she told me off and said she wouldn't play with me anymore, sitting up in my room, looking out at the window, drinking my tea, and thinking, what was that about? I just couldn't figure it out. And there were other things, too, like finding cracker crumbs, cookie crumbs in my bed. My mother had said, telling me the next morning, she's the one that gave them to me. And I don't remember that either. You know, there was just odds and ends of things that really weren't terrifically horrible or anything. It's just I realized there was something just when I became an adult now. As a child, it wasn't a problem, you know, forgetting things and finding things and losing things and having people say things I didn't know I said. But when I became an adult, it became a problem. And it became more and more of a problem. But that was only, I just assumed that I couldn't remember things or that I had a bad memory or I didn't know exactly what to think, really, but I just put it off as a bad memory. But then I went to bed one night, 1989. It was about November. November of 1989, I went to bed. I turned off my light and laid down to go to sleep, and all these horrendous visions of rape and things came back to me from a family member, and I'm like, I turned the light back on quickly, sat up and went, what was that? What was that? And I was overwhelmed. I was terrified to turn the light back off for several nights. I didn't sleep for a couple nights. And I thought, well, I'm just going nuts. That's just not real. And I'd heard about schizophrenia. I'm like, oh, my God, like, have I got schizophrenia? You know, and that's when I began looking around for a therapist because I thought, I got to get some help. I don't want to be crazy.
Yeah.
And it turns out I'm not crazy. I'm totally normal for where I've been. The personalities, not coalescing, the personalities being there are important. They're important parts of me that kept me alive and kept me going all those years.
Yes, and that's very important for people to understand, is that that this was a way to cope. It's a coping mechanism, and that doesn't mean that we're crazy. It just means that that's how we survived. And
yes.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that that way. Okay, now we'll move on to Sylvie from Nevada. Hi, Sylvie. You're on with Shirley.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Shirley, for your truth, your honesty. I just wanted to say this morning, I spent the morning making super probiotic sauerkraut, a huge batch, and I am in a state of bliss because I am okay with who I am. Everything I am, everything I'm not, absolutely everything I've been through, the child abuse, the domestic violence, recently getting diagnosed as bipolar. Wow. And you know what? Thank you guys, because your transparency, your honesty, your bravery, your courage to tell the truth keeps me on the right track of doing the same thing. Because guess what? I don't have to have any dirty little dark secret. All my secrets are out there. What a blessing. How rare is that? How rare is that? Okay. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'm in heaven tonight. Thank you.
Good. Oh, well, thank you very much. All right. Thank you, Sylvie. Okay. Now, Shirley, you were telling a little bit about some situations where an altar sort of took over and you don't remember. And I was wondering if you had when you went to the therapist, were you able to explain what was going on? Were you just sort of testing them out to see if you could really talk to them about it? The reason I ask is I had difficulty.
Oh, yes, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. I'm very lucky to have found a therapist who would listen in the first place. On average, it takes 11 years for a person who's got the ID to find someone who had diagnosed them correctly. So I was very, very fortunate to find a therapist in the first try, especially since I live in small town USA. I mean, it's unusual to be able to find someone. But when I did find her, and we began to At first, I had a horrible time talking to her about things. Nobody wants to talk about this stuff. You know, it's not. You don't want to admit that that you were abused in the first place, let alone that you're that bored, and that you have alternate selves. That, you know, I mean, you have this disorder, and especially since it was falling out of favor, and there was all kinds of negative press about it, and there was, you know. A lot of bad things were going on back in the 90s for MVID. And it took 2 years, like I said earlier. The reason it took 2 years for me to be able to cry in front of her and let alone really talk about it with her was we had to build an alliance, a therapeutic alliance, where we could work together on these issues. And I have no trust for people. I have very little trust. I mean, much more now than I ever did. But back then it was zilch. The fear that she was going to disappear and I would never get better, and the fear that, you know, all these fears just came flowing out and really blocked me for the first couple of years. It was tough going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe you have, you know, if you start to get along with the therapist, you keep thinking, well, maybe I'm going to say something and she's just going to give up or that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's kind of hard when you're...
drive her away, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So have you been writing most of your life? You do a lot of writing now. And I was wondering if that was sort of a release for you, like journaling or anything. Was that something you did a lot?
Well, I wrote my first poem when I was in the third grade, but other than writing poetry now and then and short stories, I really didn't get into the nonfiction writing about the abuse and things until really, I started my blog, the first time I wrote in it was in 2016. There was a lot of life lived in there that got in the way of really writing, but it is very cathartic for me to write in these articles and to help other people and have people give me feedback you know, they'll direct me and say, oh, you don't know how much you've helped me because you said, you talked about what's going on in my life and I feel so much better because I'm not alone anymore. And it's very rewarding. I mean, it blows me away that people come from all over the world to read my blog.
Very cool. That's great. And it's a way of getting getting your message out there. And also, as you said, it's cathartic because it just releases been inside you all that time. So, do you have brothers and sisters or any relatives?
I have two brothers. One lives here in town with me and the other one lives in Norfolk or somewhere out east. It's the town where you live.
Okay.
It's not Norfolk. It's a different town now, but I keep forgetting.
And so were they aware? Are they aware now or of what you have? Or because sometimes that tears apart families when you tell of the abuse or tell of anything that's considered not normal. And I was just wondering if that happened to you, if your siblings sort of moved away or turned away.
Well, one of my brothers did, and the other one did not. One of them wanted to leave out east. I mean, he loves me, I love him, but we don't talk about it at all. And he really talks to me because he might, not that I'll mention it to him, but I'm a reminder that something was bad in my family. And Michael, my other brother, he talks to me and he believes me. He's researched it himself. He recognizes the symptoms. He's seen me have trouble with losing time. You know, he's aware and he's my support.
That's good. It's great to have that family support. So many of us lose that.
Yes.
So I'm glad that you had that. So I was wondering what happened at 15. That the abuse stopped. Was there something at that time, or that actually caused it to stop, or did it just run its course?
Well, my dad died when I was 15 years old, and the relatives that did the most harm. That whole he and that part of my family disowned me, so it stopped. I told on my grandpa. I told on him when I was 15, and and then it was carried over to. We confronted him, and blah blah blah, and he just wouldn't have anything to do with me after that. So it really stopped because I stopped it.
All right, well that's cool.
Another my dad dying was a catalyst for it. I'm not for me telling. I'm not really sure why, and I probably never will know. That's okay.
But well, I'm glad it stopped, and that was good. Let's see. Much of the material you write is on dissociative identity disorder. Do you have do your various alters write, or do you have one primary that writes?
I have one primary that writes. The rest of them are, they might contribute here and there, but it's not like that, no.
Because sometimes when I write, I have several different ones doing it, and there's a different style, and I just was curious if you had that too, if you had different styles going for. You have?
I have had in the past. In fact, I've got a whole book of, notebook of different handwritings and people talking back and forth, writing themselves to me and others, you know. But as far as writing the blog site and writing for magazines and all this other things, that's me. I'm the head, the honcho of the group. I'm the mother of the group.
All right. Very cool. And you've integrated very well then. So that's great.
We're on the bridge of it anyway. We're in fusion.
You're at least talking to each other now.
Yes.
Rather than taking over. Yeah.
Co-consciousness.
Yeah. It's taken you more than 25 years of work and therapy to overcome the chaos that was your life. 25 years. Was that with the same person?
to keep that going, or
well,
you mentioned a really good therapist that you found at first.
That's a very long story, but I can tell you parts of it. I saw my first therapist for 7 years. And then I lost her to a bankruptcy, the clinic that she was working for, to a bankruptcy. My ex-husband now, who was my husband then, became ill and lost his ability to work. And we had huge bills and we had to take a bankruptcy. And the clinic, I was going to try to work out a payment plan with them, but they turned me down and wouldn't even let me see her again. They wouldn't let me say goodbye to her. I didn't see her again, but I did get to see her again 15 years later.
Uh-huh.
15 years later, I go into her office. And I saw her again from 2012 to 2016.
Wow.
So
how cool is that?
A lot of life lived in those 15 years, yeah. I didn't see. I only have the therapist I ever saw that was as good as her was Dawn, and she was I was in a nursing home at the time. I was actually on a psychiatric ward for 7.5 years. And that's where I met Dawn, and she helped me out considerably.
Oh, good. Good. All right.
I spiraled downhill after I saw Paula. Yeah, after I lost her, I spiraled downhill until I ended up in a nursing home.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, and that would be understandable if you weren't able to say, you know, even say goodbye and all of that. There's a lot of trauma involved with that situation.
And we were only
beginning
to get started, really. I know that 7 years sounds like a long time, but we were just getting started because there's so much of it, you know, so much involved in getting well and healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it sounds like she got you on your way, and that was great. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
She saved my life.
Good. Good. Now, and when you came back after 15 years and she remembered you, I bet she was pleased to see your progress.
Well, I hadn't progressed a lot, but she was pleased to see me.
Okay.
I had grown
all right.
It's weird how you measure it. I had grown up a lot in those 15 years.
Ah, okay.
I'd grown up into realizing that there are certain head games you can play with a therapist that, and I didn't intend to play them, but I was playing them, playing along with what she wanted instead of telling her what I needed and other things. And I learned through my experience of losing her that is not, I don't want to do that. You know, I want to get well, I want to heal, and I can't do that after I don't tell my therapist what's going on. So
that's good.
There was a lot of change.
Wow, that's great. Okay. Let's see. Let's just see if Bill and Sylvie have any questions, and then we'll continue. How's that? Okay?
Okay.
All right. Bill, you're back on with Shirley. You have any questions or comments?
Yeah, I do. First, can I just remind people that we need some panelists tonight, and if they're listening and they can call in, it would be really great to support Shirley. And I can give out the phone number for you, Joe. It's 646-595-2118. And, you know, you and I know, Joe, that there's people who are listening who haven't called in, but their voices can't be heard unless they do call in. So it's really helpful to have some of those who might be listening right now, of course, make that call. It's easy to do. And, you know, if we come to an impasse where you're not ready to ask a question, you can always say, you know, I'll share on the next round at the panel or something. You don't have to share, in other words. But really, it's very helpful. So 646-595-2118. My questions and comments are going to be about earlier in the story than we are right now, because I want to make sure myself and the listener understand some of what was gone over fairly quickly, but I think I get it that the abuse that you experienced, Shirley, was from within your family, and it happened at the hands of older males in the family, your mom, your father, your grandfather, and so forth, right? And that there were two other siblings, and so I want to ask if your mom and your two siblings or any other family members were aware at the time, do you think, about what was happening to you? And secondly, you know, you said that they reacted kind of poorly when you when your father died and you named your grandfather, I guess, is what I'm understanding. So I'd like to hear a little bit about that, too. But those two things, if you would, Shirley.
Sure. Actually, there was more than one abuser that, of course, there usually is, but there was more than one main abuser. There was Grandpa and then there was my mother. And they were both very, very physically and otherwise abusive. They're my grandfather's friends who he sold me for beer for and all kinds of things. And my siblings knew nothing about what was going on, I don't believe, because they weren't welcome out there at the house where most of this abuse took place. As far as my mother's and my brother, the one that lives in the East Coast, he realizes, I mean, he remembers some things that happened, but he doesn't remember a lot. And I really don't want to trigger him any more than I don't want to trigger him into remembering. If I could go back to where I was before I started having memories and working on this stuff, I don't think I could have stopped it, but I sure would have tried to avoid it. The abuse was very, very traumatic. I mean, things were done that just would blow people's minds, but I'm not going to trigger anyone on this phone call, on this broadcast. However, I don't believe in that. You know, I just won't talk about the specifics. But I will say that there was more than one main abuser, my mother and my grandfather and their friends. So my father, he knew what was going on, but he didn't stop it. There were all kinds of people in my family, adults who knew and didn't try to stop it. And even doctors, but it was back in the 60s and 70s, and you just didn't talk about it, let alone step in and do something about it. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was looking for. I don't need you to identify exactly who, you know, did what. I think it's interesting for the listener to hear that there were people in your life who knew something was going on and did not intercede. That's the point I was trying to get at. And then, you know, after you did reveal, there were people who, you know, kind of disowned you and so forth. I'm going to assume. But before we even get there, again, in your youth when this was going on, you were disassociating then, too, as I understand it. And I'm wondering if other people realized that there was more than one of you or if that only came later. Because the diagnosis wasn't there, I understand that, but the behavior was.
Yes.
Did anybody kind of think that you were acting strangely, a strange kid, something, anything like that?
Yes, I did. I was taken to turn neurologist in St. Louis, Missouri, because they thought I was having some kind of weird seizures because I would space out or I would just change personality. Well, they didn't. Actually, I was changing into another alter, but they didn't realize what was happening. The doctors knew. These doctors would ask me questions, and I know they knew something was happening at home, and they couldn't step in or they wouldn't step in. But yes, there was all kinds of documents out there that talks about my supposed seizure activity, which amazingly disappeared after I told my grandpa that I wasn't taken back there. See, and the splitting continued to happen, the switching. But my mother after my dad died, became very involved in herself, and like she was before, she was that way before, but she was much more so after my dad died and didn't pay a bit of attention to me. So I was out of love to go on my merry way with my problems.
Wow.
Yeah. No, that's great. Thank you very much for answering my questions. I appreciate it.
Sure. No problem.
Thank you, Bill. Good questions. Good questions. Okay, let's go to Sylvie, and let's see, are you there? There, Sylvie, you're on with
Shirley. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Thank you. And Shirley, my God, you know, you amaze me because, I mean, 7 years in a mental institution, and look at you now, you're writing books. You've turned everything around. And, I mean, I think that's absolutely amazing how Mother God works and heals us. It is profound, and that is what is available. And one of the things I wanted to say is I am learning so much because, you know, last night the show was on incest. I never experienced incest. I never experienced rape, sexual assault, or anything. Of course, everyone experiences the horrible things that men do, you know, exposing themselves and all this and that. Okay, I've experienced that, but not childhood sexual abuse. I didn't experience that. I am learning about DID from you. I am learning about all these different forms or the abuse take. And so I am learning about that from you. And I would also like to say that I can really relate to what you say about when you tell people. You know, when I tell people, and I tell a lot of people that I am a child abuse and domestic violence survivor, and, you know, their first reaction is, oh, I'm sorry. Well, you know what? Don't be sorry for me because, oh, my God, it's a gift because I'm at peace with it now, and I get to turn it around and serve. I have a purpose for my life, so I'm blessed, and that's what I tell them. Also, I told my doctor, and she couldn't handle it. I mean, she immediately, you know, talked about Demi Moore's new book and how my story was a lot like hers. I mean, hell if it was, you know. My story is nothing like hers except for she had 20 years of sobriety and broke it, and I did too. Okay, that's part of my spiritual journey. Don't regret anything. So anyway, I can't remember what else I was going to say. Went right out of my head. Maybe I'll remember next time. Anyway, I'm learning a lot from you. I'm learning a lot from you. I think you're amazing. I think you're amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sylvie. Appreciate that. All right. Come join the discussion. Call 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118.
I would recommend. I would like to talk to someone if they have any questions.
Yeah. Come on board. Because this is the opportunity for anyone who has questions like that. Since, for example, you've written what, 6 books, and so here's some information if you've ever wanted to know about it. So if you're listening now on the internet and you would like to actually participate or just listen in the panel, 646-595-2118. Thank you. Okay, Shirley, where would you like to go from here? We still have 50 minutes. So you're doing really well. We've got we're just a little over halfway, not quite halfway. So what would you like to discuss at this point? Would you like to talk about some of your books or any of that?
Well, I could talk about some of the other aspects of DID that people don't know about, like the physical aspects. Yeah, the physical things that can happen to a person, not just a person with DID, but a survivor of child abuse in general. There are a lot of there are studies out there now that show that people who survive adults who have survived childhood abuse have higher incidences of so many diseases, especially like cancer and MS and diabetes, mm-hmm. and being obese and eating disorders in general. I mean, either direction. There's a lot of physical aspects to DID that people don't realize can happen to them. In fact, it's not uncommon at all for people with dissociative identity disorder to have diabetes, especially diabetes. I've seen that a lot. They have fibromyalgia. That's a very, very common thing. Body memories, you know, I mean, I think that's what that pretty much is that your insides are aching so bad. The dysfunctions such as sexual dysfunction, where you either go one or the other direction, you're the promiscuous or you don't want it at all. And there's relationship problems where, you know, it's hard to be in a good relationship with someone if you can't trust. And if you trust too much, you can swing either direction. And finding help for DID is vital. Finding the right therapist that you can work with is vital, because there are no magic drugs. There are no magic pills. It takes work, hard work, very hard work. In fact, I think the work getting to where I am was almost harder than the abuse that I survived.
Wow.
Yeah.
That says a lot, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Wow.
Therapy takes a long, long time. And that depends. It does depend on how many offers you have, too. And I'm not saying any number of offers is worse than any other. I'm just saying that it can take longer for somebody who's polyfragmented or has over 100 than it is for a person who has 2 or 3.
Wow.
The trauma of going that you have to go through to get healing is just as bad, but it can take a lot longer the more alters you have, because you have a lot more symptomology, you have a lot more things going on. You said earlier it was 25 years or something like that. Actually, it's been 31 now.
Wow. All right. You keep working on it. That's great.
It was 31 years in, I think it was December, November.
Huh?
So it just takes it can take a long time. But I asked my therapist one time, I said, you know, I want to encourage people. I don't want to discourage them. When I say it took me 30 years to get better, it's going to sound bad. And she sat back in her chair and she played with her necklace for a minute, thinking about it. And then she leaned forward and she says, Shirley, this is what I want you to tell them. It's going to take longer than what they would like, but not as long as they fear.
Ooh,
and that was so profound. Yeah. I mean, it takes longer than what you really would want it to, because everybody wants to get well tomorrow. But it's not going to take as long as you fear.
Yeah. And it can be done, whereas sometimes you fear that it can't. Yeah.
The pain is tremendous. It's hard to see the trees for the forest, right? I mean, it's not the forest for the trees, it's the trees for the forest. There is an end to it. But as far as healing goes, healing is a lifelong thing. It's like DID is not going to go away. It's a lifelong disorder, just like any other disorder, like diabetes type 1. It's a lifelong disorder. You just have to do what you need to do. See your doctor, like your therapist. Like anyone with a chronic disease, they see the doctor, they get the tests, they go to see someone for medication if you need it. Some people don't. Some people do. There's a lot of aspects to DID that people just don't understand, because they watch these movies and they think, oh, that is the way it is. They can climb walls. They can run faster than an animal. And they eat people. Did you know that? I watched that movie and I'm like, oh, my God. But we're not weird people. We're not weird. We're totally normal for where we've been. And I'm just an ordinary person who's been through some ordinary circumstances, and I have some extraordinary ways of handling it. But I'm really just an average Joe, like everybody else.
Yeah, too. Yeah, I like that. I like that, because there's not – yeah, it's not – it's just – that's just us. That's just the way you are right now. And I like that. Okay. How did you get into a blog? What gave you the idea for a blog?
I'm not really sure why I decided to do that. This is 2016. When I was in the nursing home, I missed out on quite a bit. I was in there for 7.5 years. I missed out on the internet getting so big, and I didn't have the internet in the nursing home. I had a computer, but no internet. And so I started beginning to write things in the nursing home, things I wanted people to know about my struggles. And when I got out of the nursing home and got on my feet, I thought, I'm going to write a blog. I started writing about the first year or so. I didn't have hardly any followers. but mainly because I didn't know how to advertise myself and I wasn't writing about things people really wanted to hear. I mean, it was good information, but it was chopped up and not very good. But the more I got practiced at it, the more I understood how to use the system I was using, and the more I understood about what people wanted, the more followers I got until I had like thousands of people coming a month. I mean, thousands, 3,000, 4,000 people.
Wow.
And built up a following of thousands. So it just takes time.
Mm-hmm. So you just kept at it, though. Because it was, you were doing it mostly for you then, at that point, right? Okay.
Now I enjoy doing it for other people, because people really want to know this stuff, you know. They really want to hear the information. That's why I enjoy coming on radio programs like this, you know, spreading information, truthful information.
Yes. And helpful, especially the part about being normal for what you went through and that kind of thing. That's very important for people to understand, to realize. So did your books come out of your blog? Did your books come out of some blogs together and created a book, or were they for a different audience or something?
Well, one of my books, Surviving the Treatment, is actually, I can't remember the exact title, even though I wrote it. Surviving the Treatment of DID, I think it's called. Anyway, it came out of my blog articles. It was blog articles from 2018, I believe. But the other books are totally different. One's is a book about, it's called, research on DID and dissociative identity disorder. And what it is a whole book with as many papers as I can fit in from researchers. Has their title, their paper, their abstract, and their citation, so that people can find them for themselves. And it's all indexed, and it's a pretty good sized book. So if anybody wants to find information, say they want to find information about physical aspects of DID, just go look at the index, and there it is. And go to that page. That took a little time, but that's okay. I enjoyed it. So most of my books are, there's a couple of research books, and there's one that's very basic about DID, and there's the one I just told you about with the blog articles, which is very full of information anyway. And there's one about complex post-traumatic stress disorder, too. So, because it all fits together.
Good. Okay. And so do you, relate that to how your alters deal with the CPTSD?
CPTSD is very related to, I would venture to say that I would say 99.9% of the people who have been diagnosed with DID also have COPD. Not COPD, that's what
That's okay.
CPTSD, excuse me.
That's all right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, I'm learning lots too. I may have to read some of your books. Let's see. It's been about almost 15 minutes. Let's go back to Bill. And Bill, you're on with Shirley. I don't want to hog the whole thing. I'm having fun, but I don't want to hog the whole thing. So, Bill, you're on with Shirley.
No, you're not hogging it. It's fine. I'm doing great. Again, I'm kind of interested because I'm not as knowledgeable as I could be in this topic to, get a little background on the, I guess it's called a, what is it? Not a disease. What is it? Disorder?
Disorder. Disorder. Yeah.
Okay. And one thing I'd like to know is how would you advise those of us who are out here in the world? We're going to encounter people that have DID. We won't know it. What would be one of the first indicators, clue that we might be dealing with somebody perhaps we've known them for a while, who is suffering from this disorder. And they, and you know, and then secondly, what do you do about it if you suspect that?
Well, first of all, if you're a stranger, you're not going to know ever, because it takes trust for you to be able to see anything different. But if you do know someone and you've known them for a while, chances are you might see some changes in behavior, sudden changes. Like perhaps, like for instance, with my brother, I've known him all my life, but every once in a while I'll say in another altar that I don't like a food. Like say I told him one time I didn't like spinach, and I love spinach. So then the next time we're going to have dinner, I say, well, why don't we have spinach? He'll look at me and say, you told me you didn't like spinach. See, he didn't even know that he was dealing with another altar. It's very subtle. Mm. The chances of you or anyone else running into a child altar where it was very obvious is slim to none, unless there's extreme stress. I mean, if I were going over to my brother's house right now and he and his two children and his wife are in there, it was on fire, I can't guarantee I wouldn't switch into a child altar, because that would be extreme, okay? Mm-hmm. But something you're not going to know unless you see that. You know the subtleness. You can tell the subtleness. Now, there are times when, I do know people who have been spouses of people with DID, and they were aware of the changes, and they did see child altars. But that took extreme trust. That's the whole key right there. If you don't trust someone enough, you're not going to show your altars to them. And it takes extreme trust. So, like with Paula, it took, with my therapist, it took, oh my gosh, it was probably 4 or 5 years before she saw anyone that she knew she saw. Let's put it that way. She did, but she didn't know she saw. And the child altar didn't come out to see her till the second time I saw her, and that was probably 2 years into our second time together. So, trust is the key right there. That's the key. If a person with DID trusts you enough, they will show you their altars, or they will, their altars will show themselves. Let's put it that way. Now, if you find yourself dealing with someone who has DID, just treat them like anybody else. I mean, you're going to have a little bit of trouble because of the relationship problems they might have, the trust issues especially. They may try to abandon you before you abandon them. I do that, unfortunately. That's a few people in my wake. But if you're patient and you love them enough, they will come around and they will start trusting you. It just takes time. Time is a key too. Time and trust.
So there's no, I'm guessing there's no there's no telltale sign, right?
No.
It's just you might suspect this change in behavior is a little more than just odd, right? There's something to it, a little more to it.
Yes. You might suspect, yes.
All right.
You might see some changes.
All right, we have another caller, and I'll find their name out for you, Joe, if I know.
Okay.
It's, let's see, 212.
Okay.
It's Michelle Bless.
Oh, okay.
You might want to include her.
All right.
Yeah.
Go to Sylvie next, though, and then I will bring her on. Okay, thank you. Did want to mention one thing. Shirley, when I don't know that it was necessarily trust. It was when I got into a situation that sort of triggered me, people said that it was like I went solid for a bit, and then I totally changed, and I'm coming out with, you know, tooth and nail, they said. And so I think in that case, it was sort of a protective one that came out. Just, you know, that's the whole thing
is protective. I mean, you know,
Yeah. Okay, Sylvie, you're on with Shirley.
Thank you. You know, Shirley, you were mentioning the effects of childhood abuse. There is an official website called the Adverse Childhood Experiences, ACE website, where you can actually rate yourself and your abuse. They give you a survey, and you rate yourself, and then they show you the lifetime profound negative effects of abuse. I'm a number six. People who are number sixes, they die 20 years earlier than their peers. Okay, that ain't going to happen to me. Because I have a purpose, okay, and I'm recovered, and I eat superfoods. Okay, so, the effects are profound. Diabetes, heart disease, mental illness, addiction, suicide, chronic depression, mental disorders, you name it, the whole array of profoundly negative effects. I mean, you know, of course, all of us know that child abuse is not slime that you can just wipe off of you. It just follows you around into every conversation, every interaction, every relationship. And I found for myself over and over and over, I have to come out of denial about what I'm doing with people. Even now, I've had to 86 several people out of my life, you know. And so I just wanted to mention that it's ACE, and it is a profound. I mean, these people do studies on child abuse survivors, and it's kind of like NASCA in the way that it's very informative for us. So I'm very happy to be able to serve by letting everybody know about this if they don't know. Also, it's so enlightening for me hearing your story, hearing about your recovery, hearing about your amazing productivity of writing 8 books. I'm writing a book now, but I'm telling you, I am lightweight compared to you. I am a neophyte. And when I listen to the stories, my abuse was really nothing compared to, incest or DID. But guess what? I found that, I was crippled. I was absolutely crippled coming out of my childhood. I was the most damaged out of 4 children. But all 4 of us got so horribly damaged. They're in denial about it, okay? I am only talking to 1 family member. So guess what, guys? You're my new family. You're stuck with me. Sorry. And, I was the most highly sensitive, the most intuitive child. So that's how I got so incredibly damaged. So it's not exactly what happens to you. It's how it affects you. And so I just wanted to share that. Thanks. I'm loving your story.
You. Thank you.
And Joe, you're such a good facilitator. You're such a good facilitator. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Appreciate that. And thank you for the comments. All right, let's go to Michelle Bless. Hi, you're on with Shirley.
Hello, everybody. I just came on, so I haven't heard her story, but I'm glad that you're here sharing it. So I'm just basically going to sit back and allow myself to get the opportunity to hear you speak and get a little more of what your story is. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Well, we have about a half an hour. So how about what you've been doing lately? How about we get into something about what your life's like right now or recently?
Oh, my.
You up for that?
Can I say one thing before that?
Sure.
One of the things
sure.
that they, the ACEs studies, I mean, that's what she's talking about, adverse childhood experiences, they affect so much. And did you know that the brain, actually people who have dissociative identity disorder have a sort of brain damage. Our amygdala and our hippocampus are smaller than they should be, sometimes at 30%, which means we have troubles with memory consolidation, we have troubles with our emotions, of course, but we're hyper alert because our amygdalas don't function correctly. They found that with fMRI studies. And they've also found a way, this is something people don't know yet either, a lot of people, is that they have done fMRI studies, functional magnetic resonance imaging studies, I should spell that out, where they've done this study using people who do not have DIDs, who are actors, who pretended to have it, and people who had DID and put them in the machines and did not tell the researchers which one they were looking at, whether it was true DID or false. And they looked with the machines, and they were able to tell by the brain regions that were affected by the memories or the pictures they showed them or told them, the stories, it was a 70% accuracy, who was the person who had it and who did not. And that's really amazing, because that's a diagnostic tool they might be developing. Well, they can look in a person's brain and show them pictures or a keyword and tell immediately whether they have the idea or not. That would change so much.
Besides
that, it legitimizes the disorder among the people that don't believe in it. Because it's like, oh, my.
Mm. Yeah, that is good, though, about having a diagnostic tool like that.
Yes.
And because then you can get it earlier, get it identified earlier, and it can start the integration sooner.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yes, if they suspect you have something going on like that, and they can diagnose you early, it would save so much. Because then they could use the newest types of therapies to deal with it, to get ahead of it, you know, and to help somebody. So maybe it wouldn't take 30 years to get better, you know.
Yeah. So they
that
have
would
new
be amazing.
Therapies now. They have new therapies now too.
Cognitive behavioral therapy and, you know, different therapies, talk therapy, and they got play therapy and drama therapy and all kinds of stuff. Art therapy.
Wow.
But anyway,
That's good. Okay. Yeah. So, what's ahead for you in your life?
Well, right now I've moved from Mattoon. I don't live in Mattoon any longer.
Oh.
I now live in Springfield, the capital city of Illinois. I moved here because there's more opportunity. And I was living with my brother and his wife and children before. And now I live alone in a nice apartment in the capital city, in the capital city of Illinois. And it's I'm still working on my writing. I'm working on another book. Actually, this one I'm writing on right now is a fiction book, which is out of my forte, but it's turning out really well, and it's very nice to be able to write something that's fun. And I just opened a new blog site. The other one, DID in a Nutshell, is still there, but it's changed from the old URL to a new one. So now it's called learnaboutdid.com. And I'm trying to get the word out that it's there. Looking forward to writing some more articles for it. I just wrote one tonight. Trying to find a job. I was on the verge of getting a job when the COVID-19 started, and I was unable to carry through because, well, it closed down. The isolation is really hard because, you know, with issues like this, with DID and other issues, mental health issues, being isolated away from people is difficult. But with me, I enjoyed the solitude, so.
Yeah, me too. Because you're not really real alone, so.
No.
You know, you end up just talking to each other, to yourself. Interesting. Yeah. Learnaboutdid.com. Now that's one that that's your website that you've created, and that's to help others understand about it, huh? Okay.
Yes.
Well, cool.
And I don't just speak about DID. I talk about complex post-traumatic stress disorder. I talk about depression. I talk about all the different aspects of DID, as many as I can fit in there. So there's a lot of information stacked in that little blog.
Wow. Okay. I'll have to look at that.
Welcome.
Yeah. Because I just was thinking that in my book, the first line of my book is, "Today I'm Daniel." And so, you know, it's sort of an introduction to how you have different, just different persona and stuff going on. So,
yeah.
Okay. And you have quite a following then of people who are interested in what you have to say and also may or may not have DID, but are learning a lot from you, I bet. That's a great thing to do.
It's really rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I bet. So, so what kinds of jobs are you looking for? I mean, do you have, is it like a writing one? I mean, I would think like sort of an explanatory thing would be great, you know, that kind of thing. So,
I don't know. I'd love to find something like that. That's not easy to find.
Yeah, doesn't that sound like fun?
The job I was looking for, I was trying to get, was working for Springfield. Where they help people with getting ramps and for to stay independent.
Oh, ADA.
I get ramps.
ADA
ramps and things like that. Working for them to help, just be a support person. And also, they were going to start a new program for mental illness to have a person with mental illness represent them in different organizations and work out of the office, helping answering questions, leading groups. And that would have been wonderful. Yay. I would have enjoyed myself thoroughly. It's still in the works.
Mm-hmm.
It's not gone yet. It's just that they've closed, and I haven't been able to get the job yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping.
Okay.
I haven't worked for since 1995.
Whoa.
So,
okay. Wow.
So I've been on disability
all
these years, and I'm ready to try my wings. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. That's going to be fun. That's going
to
be fun.
I also have an opportunity to be a ghostwriter. So that's cool.
Oh, ghostwriter would be good. And also I think just being a speaker, going around and speaking about it, especially with the research you've done into the effects, the brain effects on the brain and things like that, I think you have a lot of knowledge to share with people. Like Bill was asking, you know, someone is asking, what do you do if someone you know has DID, you know, that kind of thing. You can provide a lot of information to them and how to help and how to, I think you've got a lot to share.
I do talk to college students. I've been talking to college students about DID for 4 years now, and that's really exciting. They really pay attention. You know, they're very intent on this disorder. And then when they learn nothing like a movie, then they're even more interested.
Streams in the movies. Okay, it's been about 15 minutes, so let's go back to Bill and see what he can come up with this time. Hi, Bill. You're on with Shirley.
I apologize that I didn't know you'd moved to Springfield. I've already updated your bio for you.
That's okay.
Yeah, that was quick.
And I'm really interested in being educated tonight, so... we went over whether it's noticeable or not to close people when you're young, and then when you were older, it sounded like there weren't a lot of people that understood what was going on either, but eventually it was found out. So what I want to move to now is, I guess we'd call it treatment. I'm sure there are various things that are and can be done treatment-wise for a DID situation, and of course a lot of it's going to be, I suppose, talk therapy if you want, that kind of thing. But you might have to interview like multiple, I don't know how it works. Do you have to interview every alter and so forth, get to know every one of them, get them to agree to not split off as often, or how do you do that? Or is there medication that's involved or some other form of, I don't know, hypnosis or EMDR or any, what's involved with the treatment for DID?
Well, like I was stating earlier, there are no magic pills for DID. You can treat some of the co-occurring problems like depression, anxiety. You can treat those things. And you can treat anything else that comes along, like perhaps an eating disorder. You can treat all kinds of myriad number of things that can happen along with it. Especially, you can also have bipolar with BID. You can have other diagnoses with
Whoa.
It. So lithium sometimes is used to treat the underlying problems, you know, if you had bipolarism. In treatment, in my case, talk therapy was the best way to go. I didn't respond well to EMDR. It tended to, I guess I just didn't believe in it enough or something, but it didn't work for me. That doesn't mean it won't work for other people. It just didn't work for my personal care. And it does take a long time. Of course, a long time to some people is a month, you know. But it can take anywhere from 2 to 30 years, apparently, to heal from DID. And healing doesn't mean that you're going to be like everyone else and totally coalesce into one personality. It means that you're cooperating together, you're working together, you're going the same direction, you're not splitting off as often. They call it integration, but integration is such a, they call it the nasty I word in the DID community, because people have different weird aspects of what they believe that integration is. It doesn't mean anybody's dying. It doesn't mean that you're going to get rid of anyone. It means because people tend, especially when you're first in therapy, you see the alters as other people. You don't see them as yourself. And even when you've gone through a lot of therapy, it's hard to understand totally down before it counts that the alters are you and you are the alters. I mean, they're all me. I am them. We are one. And to be able to work towards the same, in the same direction, takes time. It's like a beautiful orchestra. Okay, this is an illustration I give a lot of people to help them understand what I'm talking about. It's like a beautiful orchestra. There's 20 people playing their own instruments, but they're all playing different tunes. They make beautiful music. They're excellent at their instruments, but they're playing different tunes. And so the music they make makes no sense, and it's chaos. But one day a person comes along with a baton, a maestro, and starts to lead them. And at first it's very chaotic still. Everybody's fighting against each other. Somebody wants, this one wants to be the lead, and that one wants to be the lead. Until finally, after a long time of working together and practicing, they begin to play the same tune. And then they can fine-tune it. And then they're making beautiful music, and they're moving forward in their career. And this is exactly what happens in DID. It takes a long time for the maestro to be able to lead you. And it can be your therapist or later on it'd be yourself to lead the orchestra to playing the same music and making beautiful music together, to have a life where you're all moving in the same direction and taking responsibility for anything that happens in your body, whether it's another alter or not. That's a key too. Making a decision to get well, making the decision that you're responsible for your actions and moving forward. But it takes a while to get to that point. It takes a while. Because some people I would almost say everybody who's started therapy for DID starts out in chaos, total chaos. Not having a person that's forward all the time. Not having a fronting person, what do they call that? There's no term for it.
Like a primary?
Lead personality. Yes, a primary personality, lead personality. Not having that, having people switching in and out all the time, is chaos, man. You don't know what you're doing in your life. You don't know where you've been. You don't know who you've talked to. You can't remember your life. And once you start working through it, you begin to get better and better and better at working through your life as a continuous whole instead of being all split up and mixed up. Does that answer your question?
Wow.
Yeah, it's very good. It's a very good answer. And I apologize. I don't know very much about the specifics of it. I certainly understand the disorder and so forth, but I've known a lot of people who have related stuff to me. But I think it helps when somebody like you comes on and teaches us. You know, that's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it was mentioned earlier, the transparency that goes on by Sylvie. You know, that is really impressive to people out there who kind of can't believe it when they're first hearing it. My goodness, she's really being honest about all these mm-hmm. things that are, quote, wrong, unquote, about her. You know, they're not wrong. By the way, I also want to say that, you know, all children feel the way you felt. So you're not special in that way, in the sense that we don't know what's right and what's wrong. You know, no children do. We're not born knowing. So no matter what it is we experience as kids, we think of it as, with quotes around it, normal, you know?
Yes.
It's not normal, but it is our normal. It's our normal, you know? And we're not to be blamed for that when later in life we realize that, you know, we went through some extraordinary experiences. And you know, we who are survivors are suffering trauma. And the symptoms of the trauma, like you said before, the depression and the fear and the anxiety, and those are all the same, you know. And so they're identifying with that. The people that are listening is what I'm just by a long way of saying thank you, because we really need people to hear, and you know, that especially the honesty, because that impresses them enough to come back themselves, or perhaps to consider sharing someday, perhaps, you know, their own story. So God bless you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah, very good. Thank you. Let's go to Sylvie. We've got about 11 minutes left. Mm. So, Sylvie, you're on with Shirley.
Hi, Shirley. Listen, I absolutely adore your sense of humor. You laugh a lot, and so do I. And I love that. I cry a lot, too. And I love that, too, because I used to have a glacier of uncried tears crushing my heart, and it's gone. You know, since you mentioned bipolarity, 2 months ago I got diagnosed. I am on medication. I'm on Seroquel. I feel like I died and went to heaven. I realized that my 10-year-long marijuana addiction, where I smoked weed every second of the day, every bit of extra money I could afford, was me anesthetizing my bipolarity. And that, you know, I was just plagued by these obsessive thoughts of hatred towards my mother. Well, I have forgiven my mother, in the respect that I have let go of my anger and my rage, because I realize how incredibly sick and, you know, damaged she was and damaged my father was. So bipolarity is a blessing, because I do not get the lows. What I get is profound compassion. I will be watching television. I will see somebody hurting, and I will weep. I would never in a million years want to change that. Never. That is my soul coming through my heart saying, oh my God, I am feeling it for another person. Okay. And then the bliss is just like, oh my God, knocks your socks off. You know, the Seroquel only works so well. Thank you, Mother God. So anyway, I'm just absolutely loving it. And, you know, I don't rant in public about our president so much. Still a little bit. I'm going to do everything I can to get his ass out of there, okay?
Okay. We're moving on.
But,
all right.
It is quite a bit better. Just wanted to let you know about bipolarity.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, one thing
Thank
I would
you,
say,
Sylvie.
Too, is that addictions are one of the things that happens a lot of times, and to a person with DID as well. I was addicted to prescription drug medications for 40 years. 40
wow.
years, longer than I've been in therapy. I just got
wow.
sober 4 years ago. It was a whole new ball game going through treatment without being high. Because, you know, I had to face things head on even more than I ever had before. But, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I like sobriety. I like being able to say, I remember and I do things and I feel things I never felt before, and that's really wonderful.
Mm.
But it is a co-occurring diagnosis that comes in with the AID quite a bit.
Oh, okay. Great. Thank you. And we have a new member of the panel who came on, Darlene from Tennessee. You're on with Shirley.
Hello, Shirley. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I suffer from DID as well. And you know, I thought that I was completely over it, you know. But my kids, which the grown men now in their 30s, they said, Mama, you still do it. And I'm like, okay. What do you think that? You know. But it's something that I always lived with all my life. So I guess it's going to be something I've always got to do. So thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, no problem. And it's okay that healing hasn't come all the way, because it never will. I mean, for what people expect. You see the movies, they like some of the ones that they get over immediately over the, you know, they go through some kind of treatment, and voila, so they're well, and they walk away, and the happy ending to the story. Well, there can be a happy ending to the story, but that doesn't mean you're going to be completely like everybody, like a whole person, like what we call singletons. I have to give the title in there, the singleton, one who doesn't have multiple alters. And that's okay, because we're all a work in progress. Every one of us. There's not a soul on this planet that's not a work in progress. And actually, the bravest people are the ones who face their problems head on. They're the ones that are bravest.
Mm-hmm.
And don't try to hide from them.
That's good.
Exactly. You know, a psychiatrist that I had seen years ago, he told me, you know, where everybody tries to say, you know, we're crazy or whatever. And I said, I'm crazy or something. Or it's either abnormal, not normal or whatever, you know. And he goes, well, you know, I tell you what crazy is. Crazy is the life you live, right? And then if you react, like all of a sudden you hear a loud noise, you know, PTSD, or you hear somebody arguing, and you just sit there and just say it like it don't bother you. You know what? That's crazy, because you're really experiencing from the things that happen in your life for you to act like it was nonchalant, no problem, no biggie, you know?
Right. And self-acceptance.
Yeah.
Self-acceptance is a big one for a lot of people there's a lot of people running around out there who will never accept themselves or love themselves, and that's a sad, sad situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to love ourselves and be comfortable with ourselves if we're going to help comfortable and love other people, do it appropriately. So, yeah, we're not crazy. Actually, we're saner than most people out there. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, at least we. Yeah, like one of my teachers in psychology at college, and he goes, "You know, I don't like being with any of y'all. I'd rather be in that psych unit with all the crazy people, because at least they admit they have a problem."
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Thank you, Darlene. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Shirley, we have about 4 minutes. So what kind of closing would you like to leave people with?
Well, I think the most important thing for people to know, if you have DID or any mental health disorder, for that matter, is that doesn't define you. That isn't who you are. This is a part of who you are. It's like you're an aunt or an uncle or a mother or a father or a sister or brother. It's just a part of who you are. And to make that your center of your life is just to mess yourself up royal.
Wow.
You know, you're not. You're not your diagnosis. My name is not Shirley D.I.D. Davis. You know, that's not who. That is not my identity. Even though I talk about it a lot and I write about it a lot, it doesn't mean that it's just something I write about and talk about now. It's not my center of who I am. And another thing I'd like to say is that there's life out there. Don't give up. Never, ever give up. It gets hard sometimes working through these things in therapy. It gets very hard and very lonely sometimes. But, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. You will get better. You will see your life calm down and become who you want to be if you keep going. Don't give up.
That's great. That's great. And I loved your analogy to an orchestra. And needing the conductor to get them all to work together. I like that. So
yes.
Well, you are really an inspiration and to me, and I'm sure to a lot of others, and that you're sharing the knowledge you did, you know, you did research, so you're sharing that as well. And I think just things are opening up for you. This is great. And I appreciate
yes.
you coming on the show tonight and
you.
Sharing. Yeah, it was great to talk with somebody else you know, about that kind of thing. So this is
right.
great. Okay, I'm just going to do something weird. I'm just going to turn everybody's mics on so that they can say thank you, because we've got about 2 minutes. So everybody's mic's on. So just any closing thank yous for Shirley?
I want to say thank you to the integrated Shirley and to all 12 of Joe. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great.
We counted ourselves and we got 12 of us. So, yep, that's cool. Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
It was a great show. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you very much, Shirley. And thank
you,
Joe,
fun
really
too.
Thank
yeah,
you, Shirley.
Yeah.
And Darlene, good to hear from you, girlfriend. And I'll be listening to your talk on Monday.
Darlene's going to be on Monday? Yay.
Yes.
Oh, good
yes.
to you.
Okay.
I can't wait.
Thank you. And
thank you, Shirley.
Shirley, you're welcome to call in anytime and be on the panel as well. You are a member of the family now, and so it's the same number, and you just call in, and you have a lot to share and a lot to give to people. So thank you so much for that, and I appreciate you on here. Last word, this is going, gone, so... any last words you'd like to end up with?
Just keep going. Don't give up. Just keep going.
I like that. I like that. Thank you. And I just want to say blessings to all the children and blessings to all the survivors of child abuse. Good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was
Blog Talk Radio.